This is Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America. I'm Gary Holt, and joining me is my co-host, Tina Mae Weber. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning, Gary. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fine, getting ready for this cold weather that's supposed to be coming into Nashville, Tennessee tomorrow and in the next couple of days. But we've got a hot show today and a lot of great guests, so tell us who we have joining us today.
Well, today we have Jim McGarvey, chairman of Backcountry Horsemen. Then we will be talking with Steve Shaw, talking about Great American Adventures and his week-long Western Adventure Rides.
Well, Jim's part of the family, so he's not really a guest. I think we'll start calling him a monthly co-host, but we're looking forward to talking with Jim, and it will be a lot of fun to talk with Steve and Marcy, so we're looking forward to that. And we remind folks that Saddle Up America is made possible by our great sponsors at the General Store, where you'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the equestrian lifestyle. You'll find that in the General Store on our website at equestrianlegacy.net. So grab a cup of coffee and join us. When we come back, we'll be talking with Jim McGarvey. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Tumbleweed, riding the wind with the dandelion seed. Someday I'll land, but I don't know when. Till then I'm drifting again. She cut me loose and told me don't come back. Now I'm like a hobo by the railroad track. Drifting again like an old tumbleweed, riding the wind with the dandelion seeds. Someday I'll land, but I don't know when. Till then I'm drifting again.
Introduced it as being a hot show, but Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
and
yeah, probably overstating there a little bit on my part, me being on, but
gosh,
try to warm up to the topics.
Yeah, I've had some guests on that I could have said hot, but anyway, that's for another show. Happy New Year to you.
No, thank you, guys. Thank you, and you too, Tina. Thank you. Hope you had good, safe holidays.
Oh, we did. Thank you.
Yeah, Tina May was out New Year's riding her horse, so she bundled up. I saw a photograph. She looked like the Pillsbury Doughboy when she was.
I like it too. It was so worth it.
Goodness. Well, you know, we're glad to have Jim join us. We got a lot of things we want to talk about, and you know, I'd kind of like to start, Jim, talking about a really neat ride that you and Cindy just did.
Yeah, over the holidays down at Suwannee, it's actually Live Oak, Florida. If you Google Suwannee, or if you Google Map Suwannee, it's way on down here, Tampa, but it's called Old Suwannee or Live Oak, and it's not far over the Georgia line. So if you go down, you do need your health certificates if you even get nearer the Florida state line. But
right.
It's before you go to the agricultural inspection station, turn off and go a couple miles, and then they have another agricultural station for people to try to, you know, they've got them along the side roads too. So
right,
try
right.
to drive around them, but it's right there. And so it's an interesting place, really. It was started in the 80s by Roy Cornett's parents. Roy's on our executive committee and been American Kentucky Horse Consul, and you know, his family started it, mom and dad and guys, the kids, and you know, just kind of, I'm gonna call it swampland, but it was, you know, in Florida down there along the Suwannee River.
Mm-hmm.
And they've really carved out a neat place, and it's really a music park that has horses, but there must be there's an enormous number of stables. They're lit. There's a lot of hookups, you know. So it accommodates a lot of folks, but it's a music park with horses rather than a horse park with music.
Right.
So there's some big names down here, big stages. Their website is musicliveshere.com. And an interesting thing they did, you know, mosquitoes in Florida, I guess, might go together in water, but they built this, they call it the Bat Hilton.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
It's a tall building. It's not very big, but it's got, you know, 50 or 60,000 bats in it. And it's got to
wow.
be about 60 degrees in the evening before they'll come out during the winter. I've seen them a few times. They didn't all come out, but there's no mosquitoes. I mean, they take care of it. And that's kind of a famous landmark there. And but you ride along the trails along the river, and it's black water with white sand, beach edges, and the Spanish moss is like riding in a fairy tale land. It's and
oh, wow.
And if you come off, it's not that hard. Sorry, I can think of worse places to come off your horse at. But,
I got but a little
it's,
with that moss.
Yeah, you know, if you guys can get one of the folks from the music park to give a good explanation on it, because they even rent cabins, you know, so it's got about everything you want. A general store is like a small town. And,
wow.
So...
I did call them, and I kind of talked to them a little bit, and hopefully they can make to be a guest on the show. But I
yeah.
did, there's, when you go to the site, you need to, as far as horse camping, their music festivals, the actual music festivals where people buy tickets, they don't allow horse camping on those weekends.
Yeah,
but there's
right.
others that they do. So, yeah, just make sure that you understand that if you look them up.
Yeah,
and I'm glad
crowds.
You brought up
yeah.
about the Florida stop stations. I've traveled a lot of places, and I actually have yet to get down to Florida, but I have heard that Florida, you know, all states require all your health certificates and your Coggins. But
yeah, and you
got to
have
Florida
your destination on the health certificate. Yeah.
Yeah, Florida follows through with it, so make
yeah,
sure you have
and
them.
Kentucky's the other one. I know they don't have the ag stations, but, I mean, I've been pulled over. My horse trail was empty, but pulled over by state
wow.
patrol. Just to check Coggins, you know. And so,
wow.
Yeah, I think they're getting
states.
More strict.
Yeah. And, well, they've got a, you know, Florida has the third most horses in the country after California and Texas. So they take it serious business. They probably got the most expensive horses, that in Kentucky, you know. So
right, mm-hmm. right, right.
It's a big deal. So.
Oh, gosh. Well, I checked out the website. It looks like a great place to go visit, and about 50 miles of trails. How long did you guys stay down there, and how much riding did you get in?
Well, we had to go kind of abscess tooth. Now, this sounds awful. I got tooth during the holidays, but, you know, I taking Ow. My antibiotic thing, calmed down. But anyway, saw the dentist, you know, and so we missed a day because I said, I better see a dentist before I go riding, you know. And so he kind of temporarily fixed me up. And then we rode really 2.5 days. Some of the folks rode 4.5. We had to get back. And so you can ride. They don't show, checking the website, they don't show, there's more trails than are on there.
Uh-huh.
They're surrounded by public land and some private land that they're permitted to ride on. There's historic historic sites. There's an old hotel that was, see, the river is black water. I mean, it's that, not black water is not the right term, but it's got the chemical contact tannin, and it's
right.
Some of those Florida rivers along that area have that, and it's dramatic with the black against the white sand along the edges. And but this hotel, so people would go down to take the spirits, you know, or the waters, you know, that kind of thing back in the day.
Right.
And so they've got only the foundations there, but they've got photos and, you know, of what it looked like. And then there's old train tracks through there, like the old country, old village back in the day. And so a lot of kind of neat old historic stuff scattered around through the woods. And so you can ride. I know they rode, which isn't on here, to these mineral wells. The day after they rode, it was 17 miles, and they did it in 3.5 hours. I know Roy told me, so they were going at a pretty good walking horse clip. And
right.
And two of the young girls, they're both 10, 10, 11 or something, they were leading him, so they kept him going. So, Roy's granddaughter and another backcountry horseman's daughter. So
The youngest guides that I've heard of. So that's
Yeah, so they move along, keep the pace. But there's a lot more riding, you know, than showing. And then there's cut-through loops and different combinations, you know. And
sounds interesting.
Yeah, you can spend some time down there. And it's just kind of a neat place all around. So.
Well, it's pretty cool. As chairman of Backcountry Horsemen, you get to travel. Get to travel a lot. You end up doing a lot of traveling, but it's pretty neat the different places that you and Cindy get to ride. You know, Rock Bridge was on not too long ago on Saddle Up America, and we invited them after you and Cindy had been down for a ride. So,
well, another one to Florida. The Florida State Backcountry Horsemen have a state meeting. I didn't realize how far down it was in Florida. I said, yeah, we'll go, but it's fine. We're looking forward to it. I give you a little report on that. It's with February 7th or that weekend, 5th and 6th.
Uh-huh.
And going down there and ride with the folks further down and do that. You know, the one last thing on Swan, this is funny. Last year we were down there, and so all the they had a big music thing going on too, but the horses were still there. But so we decided to go to this one of the homes they have. It's a couple miles away. We all went over for New Year's Eve to watch, you know, the TV and the ball drops. It's about 30 or 35 horse people.
Right.
At about 10:20, they said, kind of getting tired over Brian. They said, well, I think it's New Year's. So everybody hugged and kissed and went home at 10:20.
This year
we did stay up because they had some fireworks and stuff, so we didn't stay up this year. But last year, 10:20, we called it New Year's.
It was funny. My youngest daughter called me on New Year's Eve, and she said, Dad, she said, I missed the ball drop. She said, I missed New Year's. And I said, well, it's not New Year's out on the West Coast, so you're still have plenty of time to celebrate. So that's pretty cool. Hey, we're going to take a break and give something away, and we won't announce the winner until we come back from our break. But, Tina, tell us about the Legacy Club and what we're giving away today for our weekly winner.
Well, our Legacy Club is free, 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 and our members get entered into our drawings for free prizes and discounts from our Legacy Club sponsors and select campgrounds and dude ranches. We had just gave away a two-horse Hydrohorse system for our end-of-the-year prize last week from our premier sponsor, Hydrohorse. And this end-of-the-month prize is a $100 gift certificate. It's from Tucker Tack. Today we are giving away a gift pack from A Little Pet Vet.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We're going to listen to Prairie Skies by Eli Barcy. We're going to announce the winner for our weekly drawing for the Legacy Club. And you can register for the Legacy Club membership at equestrianlegacy.net. It's free. So visit our website and be sure to enroll in the Legacy Club. And when we come back, we'll announce our weekly winner and we'll talk more with Jim McGarvey. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Oh, the stars shine brighter 'neath the prairie sky. My life is much sweeter there, I can't deny. Yodel with the coyotes and rope and dragonfly. I met my best beneath the prairie sky.
Ago, and she said it was minus 18 in Saskatchewan, Canada. So we can't complain too much down here. But anyway, Tina May, you did a little drum roll for us last week. Have you got a drum roll before you announce the weekly winner? Gosh, we may have to buy you a drum or something. That was pretty
weird.
You're
going
anyway.
To. This desk just isn't doing it. Well, yes, we've got a winner.
All right, who is it?
And today we're giving away a gift pack from A Little Pet Vet, and our winner for that prize is Rhonda Mills of North Carolina. Congratulations, Rhonda.
All right, so we'll be getting it in touch with Rhonda, and she'll be receiving her gift from Little Pet Vet within the next week. So congratulations to Rhonda. Jim, when you were on last time, we had some sad news that we shared with our audience about the passing of Ken Osk. And I know since then you have been to his memorial service. And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it was, in Columbia Falls, Montana, where we were started in that valley, the Flathead Valley, in that town. And our corporate address is still Columbia Falls, Montana. And we had, it was really rather interesting, as funerals go, I suppose. But there were start at 10 and to 12 type of thing, and there's a Catholic Mass there at 11. But at about 10:30, they ask folks to come up and give some talks about their time with Ken, and everybody that spoke, about four or five people, knew Ken for decades, literally 40 and 50 years. And
right.
And Roland Cheek, who's been a guest on your show, he gave, of course, he's a great speaker and writer, gave a great talk, so articulate. A fellow named Greg Schatz, who's probably known a younger guy as things go, probably has known Ken 25 years, and he wrote a great, he gave a great articulate talk, and past national chairman, another one from up there, gave a talk, and some folks, and Ken's wife, Phyllis, had asked me to speak, and I thought that I would give just, you know, a long, little short time, but when I went to the house the night before, I was in with relatives, not were all over, she asked me to if I would give the eulogy, and I was kind of stunned. I usually don't mind speaking in front of people. Matter of fact, a lot of people break into sweat, and I break into sweat when I talk to one person, you know. But if there's a lot of people, I got no problem. But I really got so that was towards the end of the whole service, and by the time it was my turn, I made mistakes. I stumbled right when I got up there first speaking, but got my act together pretty quickly. And it stepped on a decade. I talked about just 3 days in Ken's life, September 15th, 16th, and 17th of this year. We went to Washington, D.C., backcountry horsemen for the Wilderness 50 week, and I talked about how there were 8 backcountry horsemen went on that trip, and members, and 6 of them were in the church that morning, counting Ken's Ken being there. I talked about how Ken and I had teamed up. We broke into teams and did, you know, met a lot of important people, congressmen and head of the Park Service and that kind of thing. And I think I told them how it struck home to Ken how much they'd come in 41 years, you know, the thing he started and stuck with the whole time. And here we're talking to, you know, sitting and talking to congressmen and all those, the heads of the agencies, land agents, federal land agencies. And so it was a birthday right in the middle of that the 15th too. And I know I've talked about that trip before, so I won't go on, but I explained how we did see 25 between our teams. We had 25 meetings in 3 days all scheduled and plus some other events. So I thought that was, a great thing that Ken was able to attend, and Ken and Phyllis, kind of a culmination of that he could see that all of his work. So it was right. So that's what I had talked about, and then I spent the afternoon. Cindy and I went over to Roland Cheek's and talked philosophy and horses and everything.
Yeah, I told you I'd like to have been a fly on the wall during that conversation with Roland, because he's such an interesting guy.
Yeah, and he is, and he says exactly what he thinks.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about such a legacy that Ken and Roland and the other two co-founders of Backcountry Horsemen of America and the legacy that they've left, and. Gosh, what an honor it was for you to be able to be there and to be able to present the eulogy.
It was. I was kind of stunned. I don't know, if you get the our newsletter will be online, our winter newsletter, and if you get it in the mail, Ken Roland's talk and Greg Schatz's talk and actually other chairman's talk. They've written them down, and so they're included, plus some other comments from folks, and I have a few comments too, and then my letter. So there's a good bit about Ken with pictures and things, kind of a two-page special part in that thing. So
yeah, well, I look forward to reading that. So, well, there are a lot of things. 2015 is a new year. I know that there are some things that are going on. Legislatively and with our trails, and we have to remind our listeners that if it weren't for backcountry horsemen and other people that become involved, we wouldn't have places to ride today.
That's
well,
right.
Wouldn't it be? It'd be shrinking, and I think there was we've had a lot of email traffic among our executive meeting that a few on New Year's Day in the Rose Bowl parade was a couple of interesting things I can talk about, but one of them was the Forest Service had a three pack strings of the mules in the Rose Bowl parade, plus pulling a wagon with the head of the Forest Service, the chief, the 17th chief of the Forest Service, in there also, and the head of the Region 5, which is California in the Forest Service. And why that's particularly important, and this is what brought out some of the folks who have been in the backcountry horsemen for years, was that, you know, 20 and 25 years ago, there was a movement with the management of the Forest Service to kind of edge pack horses and horses out, you know, or not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's still there, but it's improving a ton, but it was kind of a tipping point. And so having the Forest Service have pack strings still going, and actually the ones that they were there were the California group, and they were kind of regenerating their effort.
Mm-hmm.
And because they realized that to work in the wilderness where you can't have chainsaws or mechanical items, you know, this is what you do, just the way we did 100 years ago and more. And so and to be on TV and for the head of the Forest Service to be there, you know, it just was really an emphasis, because I'm sure a lot of folks from the Forest Service tuned in, you know.
Right.
And
right.
That they and interesting about that pack string group out of California, the Forest Service out of California, they had I believe the name right, because there's so many fires, but I think it was called the King Fire, northeast of Sacramento, and it's part of that area, but it's really rugged. And so what they did to get people out, matter of fact, some of our folks got, there were some young groups in there that doing trail work as volunteers this summer, had to get them out, had to get equipment in, and the Forest Service. And those mules took the place of 115 helicopter flights.
Oh, wow.
And so not only the cost of that, the helicopters would be then doing something else, but it's a safety issue, the whole thing that goes to fires and flying, you know. And so
right.
They displaced 115 helicopter flights, which I think is pretty extraordinary. And so that was a good story. The other one is something that we've just started in December that was in the parade also, as it turns out, is the Buffalo Soldiers organization. And Randy, our wilderness advisor, at the wilderness big meeting in October, met with the current president of the Buffalo Horsemen. And the Buffalo Soldiers were the black soldiers and the cavalry out west after
right.
the Civil War. They formed their own regiments. There was some integration at the time, but mostly they formed their own regiments. And they went on to be to work in Yellowstone when it was, you know, just becoming a park, part of the tracking. I mean, they've been a lot of great places, and there's a lot of interesting history that where they were stationed at camps out west, and you know, what they do is it's similar to what my mind was that what they do that did was they were reenactors, like Civil War reenactors, you know,
right.
And they have 23 chapters across the country, and seven of them or a third of them are mounted, and they were in the Rose Bowl parade. About 15 or 20 mounted Buffalo Soldiers, their group are out there. But we got talking to them, and what else they do is they work with inner-city youth and that, try to get, like we all do, try to keep kids on the straight and narrow. And
right.
So we've had our conference call in December with both sides there, backcountry horsemen, the Buffalo Soldier folks. We're having one coming up next week again, so monthly calls to put this together to get the ball rolling. And we're going to be using North Carolina National Forest and to use our packing background and working in the woods and the forest to kind of put both our groups together and see what we can accomplish. There's a lot of excitement on both sides. And all these times that we have now, it's kind of a nice thing to have happen. And so
it really is. Yeah, it really is.
And they're having their national meeting here in at the Kentucky Horse Park, I mean the Olympic Horse Park here in Atlanta this summer, their national meeting. And so and we got the Forest Service tuned in on this, about this too, because they anything to do with kids that they want to be part of, so to help any way they can. So I think that's going to be a good story coming out here as we get more deeply involved in that. So that was kind of two things on the Rose Bowl Parade that among 18 equine floats or parade people groups that hit us. And so
that's great.
And then we got our for 2015 we have all our folks trying to keep the trails open, working out there. I think we've got a lot of enthusiasm. I get comments on a lot of new and renewed enthusiasm with all the things we have going on. And then we've got our, which I have talked about, I won't go in depth, but just to recap, we've got our, right now, speaking on, today, the 6th of January, we have these issues. Maybe next week there'll be a whole new one jump out. But, we've got that National Trails Stewardship Act to get passed in Congress. We had over 30 sponsors.
Uh-oh.
But now with the new Congress, you have to do it all over again.
Right.
You got a new number, right. And it's not won't be the act of 2014 anymore. It'll be 2015. So I was just on the phone today trying to see if we can get that going. I think we've got some Senate help, and the fact that we have not asking for any money will help, of course, to get that through. So we're going to be, once the dust settles here next week or two with Congress, we're going to be kind of sharpening our pencils and seeing what we can do now to get that going. And then we've got this Sequoia Kings Canyon. I talk about this because it's an iconic park. It was our third national park, and they're questioning the horses. The new movie Wild that's just come out with Reese Witherspoon,
right,
about the woman that kind of walked off her problems. There's 200, just in that whole part of the Pacific Crest Trail, there's 215 miles that it's between place to place to restock, for food. So if you go,
right,
if you start on it, you got to go, and don't turn back, you got to go 215 miles before you get your new can of beans. And so,
oh, wow.
The problem, and that's right up along the Sequoia Kings Canyon and that area. And so they're discussing, there's anti-horse groups that say we shouldn't be, the horses are a species. It's the they classify with weeds. That are, I can't think of the phrase right now, but it's like, we're brought in from the outside that we weren't part of it. The horses weren't.
We're
part
not.
Of it,
we're not native, aren't we?
Yeah. So, I guess folks from New York City walking, going through the mountains are native species. But anyway, So I don't know, but it's that one's we're working really closely with the park. I think it's going to come out positively. We'll just see how that goes. Cause that's good. And same with, Olympic National Park. There are within 100 miles of Seattle is more wilderness than anywhere else within 100 miles of the United States. And so, North Cascades and Olympic National Park. And so, but there's a lot of folks out there too, within 100
right.
miles. And
right.
so you don't have to drive to Yellowstone. You can just, go a couple hours and there you are. So we think it's going well. We keeping on top of it. But an interesting thing that's gaining steam that's a little complicated, but it rears its head every 20 years, but this time it's rearing it really big. It's a transfer of federal lands to the states.
Yeah.
And that, it's there's a lot of anti-federal sentiment out west. Not everybody, mm-hmm. but they don't help the tax base because with timber has stopped now, oil's in places, but. They don't support the tax base of the schools and things like they used to,
Right, right.
And then you hear about, they're not taking care of the trails and they're closing this and so the idea is the states can do it better. And Montana set up a commission, the late state legislature, Utah state legislature has. And so it's, I would say that for the most part, the backcountry horseman's position, we haven't got an official position on this, so it's kind of, it depends what state you're talking about. They're all at different stages of this thing. But
right.
To keep it with the federal, I mean, it's our lands, and I'm not sure the states can handle it any better, you know.
Right.
I think that's more as far as certain states. I mean, I know everything's different in each different state, but I think a lot of that transferring the federal land to the state is mm-hmm. because people feel that the federal are not listening to the people that live in their state and what their needs are. And I'm not just talking about horse people. I mean, you've got hunters. You've got people that have campgrounds. You have, you know, the hikers. It's everybody involved. And I think that the main voice in that is because the people are not being heard by the federal. They feel they're not being heard by the federal, and they want the state to bring it back because they have more control.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you've got a problem in your state, like we had one with one of our state parks here, where Cindy and I met, actually, but they it was much easier to get to somebody important very quickly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a more manageable basis. With now, it's the Park Service and the Forest Service are pretty good about staying local in some issues, but they follow what comes out of Washington, and, you know, you got to track that down. The whole problem can be old news by the time you finally get to somebody.
Right.
So, yeah, you can sympathize with people that have lost their land. You know, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of towns that are buried under Corps of Engineers lakes.
Right,
you know,
right.
And Smoky Mountain National Park.
Is a good example.
You know, they took the land, and there's still people bitter, families up there. They're not in the park now, but used to be. So it's really understandable, and that's probably why we won't maybe have a position. It's just that it's out there. I know the senator from Texas, the Congressman Bishop, who's head of the Natural Resources Committee, this new year coming up, is sort of pro-state transfer, at least the idea. And so it's got some legs, and we'll see where it goes.
Well, we've got quite a few issues that we're going to have to keep up with, and you know, we always have a lot to talk about, and we have run out of time for this segment of the show. You know, I look forward to having you back with us again in every first Tuesday of the month with Backcountry Horsemen, so we're tickled to have you on. You know, maybe next time we might talk about some of the youth programs that Backcountry has in place, and some other issues that we're talking about today, and kind of see where we are. But Jim, one time, give us the website for Backcountry Horsemen.
It's backcountryhorse.org or backcountryhorse.com, wherever your finger wants to land. We've got both of those, and so backcountryhorse.org, and we've got a lot of information, a lot of contact information, and if you want to join, you type in your zip code, and it'll give you a close by chapter, and being in 29 states
and adding.
And I
highly recommend. You've got a wonderful site. Your website's great, and I really highly recommend people that are listening that use the trails, whether it's by horse, whether it's by your own 2 feet, or anybody that goes out there and enjoys the trails and everything, to join the Backcountry Horsemen, be in the know, find out what's going on out there and what's coming up, so that you can have a say-so in it. So.
All right. Well, visit backcountryhorse.org or .com, and Jim, look forward to talking with you soon, and look forward to riding with you and Cindy in the next few months, I hope.
Well, thank you. Yes, we're looking forward to see if we can put that together. So thank you, Jim. Thank you, Gary. All right.
Thank you, Jim. Have a great day.
You bet.
All right. Talk with you soon. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Steve and Marcy Shaw with Great American Adventures. It's going to be fun, and we're looking forward to talking with them. We remind you that you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Don't mean work is over yet.
right, for the brand, and we are excited to have Steve and Marcy Shaw join us to talk about Great American Adventures. And Steve and Marcy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Well, we've
Hi, Steve. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Dina. How are you?
I'm good.
We've got a lot of folks that have been excited about listening about how they can ride the trails that Butch Cassidy and Quanah Parker rode, and
John Wayne,
Tina May's good friend Julie Goodnight, and but anyway, we want to talk about Great American Adventures, and I'd like to start out. And we visited with Steve a little bit yesterday and weren't able to talk with Marcy, so we'll see if her story is the same. But tell us about how you guys...
I should have briefed her.
tell us a little bit about how you met and how Great American Adventures got started.
Well, I guess I'll start by saying how we met. This was over 35 years ago.
Right.
And I was on a business trip to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, from Los Angeles, where I'm from. And I was checking into a hotel, and I saw that there was some ladies going upstairs.
Which doesn't sound very good.
Which doesn't sound very good, but some guys I was with, we were all a bunch of single guys, said, let's go see where those ladies are going. And there was a big annual business convention that Marcy was attending with, it looked like 500 more people. And we went in there and we started chatting with some of the young ladies, and Marcy and I hit it off and we started talking. The next night I took her to dinner, and I was leaving the next day, so I told her that when I got home from Los Angeles, this was like on a Thursday evening, I told her on Monday when she got back to work, I got back to work, I'd call her. And then over the weekend, I was wondering, why did I say I would call her, except I just liked her so much. We just talked 90 miles a minute. We got along extremely well. But she's in Pittsburgh, and I'm in Los Angeles. Why would I call her, except I was brought up that a man is as good as his word, and I told her I would call her. I know she was expecting me to call her. So that Monday morning, I called her. And from then on, we talked. That was like in early October. And every morning I talked to her. We got along famously on the phone. I would call her in the evening. We talked all the time, whether it was about the Pittsburgh Steelers, which she was a big fan of, or whatever we spoke about. We just enjoyed each other's company. And then she invited me out for Thanksgiving in Pittsburgh to meet her family. I thought, well, okay.
Wow.
Pretty brave, huh?
Pretty brave.
Yeah.
And I fell in love with her family. And so I invited her to meet my family. Her family is like a big Walton family, big, huge. Everyone loves each other, very functional family. And then I invited her to come out and just see my mom and dad, because that's all I have in my family. And that was at Christmas time. And when she said, yes, she'd come out, I went out and I bought an engagement ring, and my parents said, you're crazy. You don't even know this girl. And I said, yeah, but
there's
something. You got to go with your gut feel. And I asked her to marry me on New Year's Eve, 35 years ago, this past New Year's Eve.
That's right.
And we got married
in
March.
And she said yes.
I said yes, and then we were going to get married in March, but then he couldn't wait to see me till March, so we got together for Valentine's Day. So we saw each other a total of 5 times before we got married.
Probably a total of maybe
wow.
3-4 weeks total if you had it every day.
Yeah. And they said it wouldn't last.
And she left her big Walton family in Pittsburgh and moved out to Los Angeles where I was working.
Right. Well, that's it in a nutshell.
Oh, gosh.
Well, I think you guys are the cutest couple.
It was fate.
I haven't met you, but it sounds like Steve was a pretty smooth operator.
He was a smooth operator. You got it. You got it.
Goodness. Well, how did Great American Adventures come about?
Well, we went through our corporate lives for the most part, but as we started ending our corporate lives, and we were very fortunate, we were able to retire early in life, she found out along the way that when I grew up in Southern California, I grew up playing cowboy. You know, A lot of guys played sports. A lot of guys did different things. I played cowboys as a little boy.
Well, his family was from Texas and Oklahoma, so that tells you why.
Okay.
Well, and every summer, when my dad had his 2 weeks vacation, we'd always go back for the family reunion, and it was usually hosted in Texas. Visited my grandmother in Oklahoma, and of course, I always wore my favorite cowboy hat and Buscadero toy guns and holster, and I dressed up like a cowboy, and I'm sure everyone back in Texas, Oklahoma thought I was kind of strange to look at, but I still have pictures of me dressed up when I was 8 years old and 10 years old, and so here we are, flash forward, 40 years or more,
yeah.
And she goes, what do you want? What do you, you know, you got to have an interest if you're going to retire. You can't just play
golf. Sit around and do nothing
or watch Western. And I said, I'd like to play cowboy. And I said, let's go out on a ride. And so we were, like everyone else, just paying customers. And we went for a five-day ride up in Montana. And we camped out every night. And Marcy and I, we're not campers. We're basically city slickers.
I had not camped since I was a Girl Scout, and I still didn't like that.
But we had a wonderful
wow.
time. And then she said,
you owe me big for camping out.
And I said, what do you want to do? And she said, her mom and dad had a house on the Ohio River in Pittsburgh, and the Delta Queen steamboat used to go by every day. And they said, she said, I'd like to go on the Delta Queen steamboat because my brother's best friend is the captain of the Delta Queen. And I said, that sounds really boring. And she said, well, how about if you wear one of your frock coats and you can play like you're a riverboat gambler? And for a guy who was in his 50s, it kind of sounds kind of silly, but I said,
okay,
let's do that. Let's invite some friends who like to do this, or like-minded like I am. And so there may be 8 or 10 of us, 4 or 5 couples that went. We had so much fun on this Delta Queen steamboat. And I know I'm plugging the steamboat company, but I should, because they're a wonderful company. We had so much fun. We probably did over 10 steamboats, and we started doing that. And we really weren't a company. We were just a hobby, getting friends to go.
Right.
But as more and more people came, on one of the steamboat cruises, it was a Civil War theme, because I love the Civil War history. And one of the historians said, God, you really like to organize these events, because on the Delta Queen, it held 174 people. 1 week, we had 100 of our people
all dressed up.
My goodness.
All dressed up in Victorian clothing.
Every day, every night.
Oh, my goodness.
Civil War uniforms,
wow.
Cowboy uniforms. Marcy is a wonderful seamstress. She makes the most wonderful Victorian gowns for herself. And one of the historians said, you're so good at organizing events. Have you ever thought about coming out to the Little Bighorn and joining Custer's Last Stand? We have an annual reenactment. And I said, no, I'm really not a horseback rider. We've been on a couple of Dude Ranch experiences, but no, I've never really thought about doing that. He goes, well, you should consider it, and we would certainly welcome you out there. It's a wonderful experience. And, well, I had stayed in touch with some of the Wranglers over the years that we had done a couple things with up in Montana, and so I contacted a couple of them and said, well, could you arrange the horses if I could get a group of people to participate in this annual reenactment? And they said, oh, absolutely. And so in 2004, we did our first actually organized horseback ride. It wasn't my ride. It wasn't Great American Adventures ride, because the reenactment goes on every year and probably has for the last 25 or 30 years. But we participated with them. We had so much fun. I probably did it about 4, 5, 6 times. I started adding history to it, because it was basically just a reenactment. And I wanted to go see where Custer rode. And I started talking to some of the Crow Indians up there, which were just wonderful to us. And they knew the routes. And so after the first year or two of just doing the reenactment, I started adding on to the ride and making it more historical. You know, where did Custer go here? Where was this? Where was that? Make a long story short, we had so much fun, and I felt so confident in our abilities to organize horseback rides after doing this for a few years. I told Marcy, we should launch off on our own and create our own rides, because this is really our ride. They just allow us to participate every year. And Marcy said, well, what would you like to do? And I said, well, my favorite movie is Tombstone. Believe it or not, one of our good friends is Hugh O'Brien, who was Wyatt Earp back in the late 50s and early 60s.
Right.
I said when we lived in Los Angeles, because we live in New Mexico now, we have for the last 8 years. It's more conducive to playing cowboys than living in Los Angeles. But
right.
when we lived in Los Angeles, we had the opportunity to, for lack of a better word, to wrangle some celebrities for different events, Western events like Golden Boot Awards, etc.
Right.
And most of my favorite actors were in that movie Tombstone, which is the one with Kurt Russell and Val Kilmer. That's my favorite Western. So I told Marcia, I said, I'd like to see if we could duplicate Wyatt Earp's Vendetta ride. I mean, he took a month to do it. We can only have 4 or 5 days, so we're not going to be able to do everything he did or camp out like they did. But I'd really like to go to some of those sites. So she said, well,
let's go to Tombstone. Let's go check it out.
And that's what we did. We hired historians. We hired guys that had Jeeps. We went to all these places. I deemed it doable from my point of view, and what do I know? I actually called my wranglers and said, you need to come down here and tell me if you think this is doable from a horse's point of perspective. And they came down and they said it is. And so back in 2009 was our first Wyatt Earp Vendetta ride, which basically became my signature ride. I should say our signature ride, because Marcy helps me all the way through all of this.
Right.
And it has been our most successful ride, our most popular ride. And, of course, the town of Tombstone welcomes us. They're so wonderful to work with. And we just have a ball. And from there, I gained the confidence. I said,
let's do something else.
So over the years, we've done rides that, whether it includes Butch Cassidy or Jeremiah Johnson. This year I have a brand new ride. I call it Comanche Moon, but it's going to be in Palo Duro Canyon, where the Comanches headquartered, where Quanah Parker lived, where Charlie Goodnight had his ranch. There's just so much history in the panhandle of Texas, and the people I'm working with in Amarillo, just like in Tombstone, are just so wonderful to work with and helping me, because they see that I'm just not doing a horseback ride. You can do a horseback ride anywhere.
Right.
I want to go on historic trails if possible. I want to go to historic sites if possible.
And have historians if possible.
And I always have historians, not every day, not every moment of every day, but sometimes a historian will be the destination for us. To give you an example with my Wyatt Earp ride, we'll ride out almost to an unknown spot where Wyatt killed Curly Bill. And if people are familiar with the movie Tombstone, they can imagine that battle. And when we get there, I have a historian who I jeeped in, who's sitting there waiting for us. We usually get there right around lunchtime, and he tells us the true story, which is a little bit different than what you see in some of the movies.
No, I was just going to say, Tombstone happens to be one of my favorite Westerns as well. And, I was kind of happy to see Curly Bill meet his just ends.
Everybody was.
And there's still controversy about that, too.
Right.
That's what I like about everywhere we go, whether it's the Custer ride or the Wyatt Earp ride or my Billy the Kid ride. There's always controversy about some of these individuals. And did Wyatt actually kill Curly Bill? And the historian really paints a nice picture. We get private tours of the OK Corral and of Tombstone. When we go to Palo Duro, we're going to get private tours of some of these wonderful museums that Texas has to offer. And that's what I like to do. Last year, as a matter of fact, talking about having historians, on my meet and greet on each of my rides, I try to make them special. Last year, for my Wyatt Earp ride, I invited an author by the name of Larry McMurtry.
Oh, wow.
He had just published a book about Doc and Wyatt, a fictional account of them called The Last Kind Word Saloon, and I invited him to come to dinner, and he brought his wife, and he brought his books so he could sign them for us, and that was a wonderful experience.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, we want to take just a quick break, and we have a song about another historical Western figure. Are you guys familiar with Bell Starr?
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to listen to a story about Bell Starr, and this is a song performed by Joni Harms. When we come back, let's talk more about some of your past rides and get into a few of the rides in addition to the Comanche Moon Ride that will be coming up. And you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world at equestrianlegacy.net. When we come back, we'll be talking about more great American adventures with Stephen Marcy.
In a velvet dress, she'd ride through town shooting at the sky.
She loved to drink and gamble and play her old piano. Great ruckus like the West had never seen.
She'd steal your horse, not your cattle, and she always rode side saddle.
Dallas came to love the Bandit Queen.
But a great big Cherokee Indian was the one whose name she chose to be her own. Bell star to all us outlaws, from Texas back to Arkansas. We hid out in the rolling hills of her Oklahoma home.
We loved to drink and gamble, she'd play her old piano. Raise a ruckus like the West had never seen.
She'd steal your horse, not your cattle. And she always rode side saddle.
Dallas came to love the Bandit Queen.
She knew the James Gang and the Youngers. The shotgun put her under. Fired by Edgar Watson. A coward, not a man. Her sweet daughter tried to save her. But the Dallas Morning Paper said they buried her in a pine box and put her pistol in her hand.
Play her old piano, raise a ruckus like the West had never seen.
She'd steal your horse, not your cattle, and she always rode side saddle.
Dallas will always love the Bandit Queen. Oh, and Dallas will always love
that Bandit.
Joni Harms performing that one. And one of the things that I don't think we've talked about yet is the fact that your guests for your rides are invited to come in period costume, aren't they?
Absolutely. Kind of harking back to when we did the steamboat cruises and wearing our frock coats, I thought it would be fun when we did our rides. And it's not mandatory to dress in period clothing, but I welcome that. And if people go onto my website, we look like we've just come out of a Western movie, or we've come out of the Old West. We all wear cowboy hats.
Oh, I think
hats.
People
wear,
love that.
We wear knee-high boots. We wear the vests. We wear, for the states that allow it, open carry, we wear our cowboy guns. They're not. I don't allow them to be loaded. There's no reason for them to be loaded. Fortunately, there's no more bad men out there like Curly Bill that we have to worry about. And I think what draws a lot of the Europeans to my rides, every year on almost every ride, we have people from Europe and from Brazil, from Australia. This last year on my Vendetta ride, I had two gentlemen from Berlin, Germany, and they were dressed better than
some of the people that are from here. They were great.
You know, people love the whole Western look and the whole, you know, playing the part. And some people just look for a place to be able to do just that. And I think
right.
that would go over very well. They would absolutely love, you know, riding in these adventures and then playing the part, you know, with the dress and everything. And,
well, that's
and people
how
just
sometimes
love it,
we so. Get the women involved, because the women sometimes, they may not ride, but they love to dress up, especially in the evenings and you know, dress the part there. So they enjoy that part.
That would be great. So I'd have to unload my pistol, huh?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I'm very strong about safety.
Yes.
Understand.
But we do
well,
have men and women
about
like Marsha was mentioning. I'm sorry?
I was going to say, let's talk about some more of your rides. Talk about some of the rides that you've had in the past and talk about how long they are and kind of the areas. And
okay.
We'll briefly kind of touch on a little bit of these rides that you've had in the past. You've talked about Comanche. You talked about the Wyatt Earps. Let's talk about some of these others.
Well,
okay.
Another one of my very, very popular rides is the one I do in Monument Valley. We're right on the border of Utah and Arizona. And my focus on that ride, and my Navajo guide is so wonderful. My focus is the John Ford and John Wayne movies that were filmed there. Obviously, there was a lot of movies filmed there. I think Monument Valley has had more films featured in Monument Valley than in any other locale in the United States. And my Navajo guide knows them all. In fact, when she was a small girl, she was a background actor because she was born and raised in Monument Valley and still lives there. And so she actually was background on some of these movies like Cheyenne Autumn with Richard Widmark. But my focus, because I grew up loving John Wayne, so my focus is the John Ford, John Wayne movies, and we get to see a lot of those sites.
Yeah, what is her name?
Her name is Effie.
Effie has, she's so well known, it's just such a small world.
That's right.
Yeah, we've had guests.
We're very well known.
Yeah, Michael Martin Murphy has talked about riding with her as well as some other guests that we've had on the show. So I just had to interrupt and ask her name because I thought that's probably who you were going to say.
Absolutely.
She's wonderful. Everyone falls in love with her. We also learn about the Native American culture.
Mm-hmm.
We see petroglyphs and stone buildings. It's a wonderful ride, and we ride deep in Monument Valley where the tourists they can't possibly go, not even unless they hike, and you wouldn't want to hike out there because there's no water out there.
Mm-hmm.
A horseback ride is probably the best way to see Monument Valley.
Yeah.
And all of our rides, including this one, are 4 to 5 days in length,
mm-hmm.
and we're usually in the saddle about 9:30-ish in the morning after breakfast, and I try to get us out of the saddle by 4:30 or 5 so people have time to get back, have a nice shower, get dressed up in their frock coats and Victorian gowns if they're interested in doing that, so we can have a nice dinner.
Neat. So this is an all-inclusive, a week-long ride, and everybody can kind of play the part if they choose to. And you make it, you turn a very neat historical ride into an adventure for the people that participate.
So, well, one of the rides we just did this year was in Silverton, and we went, and Steve will tell you about how we robbed the train.
Oh, the great train robbery.
The great train robbery, absolutely.
Our newest ride, which just happened this past September, I call the Great Train Robbery, after the movie. It's a 1903 silent movie called The Great Train Robbery. And Marcy and I went up and met with the operators of the Durango and Silverton narrow gauge steam locomotive up there that goes between Durango and Silverton. That train normally is never robbed. I've been on a lot of trains where reenactors are hired and they're well rehearsed and they rob the train and entertain the people. They don't do that up on this particular train. And the scenery, the San Juan Mountains are so gorgeous, and it's so historic. I mean, Doc Holliday, Wyatt Earp, Bat Masterson, Butch Cassidy,
right.
And his Wild Bunch, they've all been up in this area for one reason or another. Doc used to play Pharaoh. Wyatt Earp ran a gambling room up in Silverton. Butch Cassidy robbed the San Miguel Bank up in Telluride. And so the history was calling me. And Marcy and I went up, and we spoke to the owner of the train with our concept of
robbing the train.
advertising to the general public, having people who are not reenactors, who are not well rehearsed, robbing their passengers, and they allowed us to do it, and it was just a huge success.
I
mean, how many people get the chance to be on a moving train, staying on and we rob like 4 or 5 different cars. To get up from a group and say, everyone put your hands in the air, this is a stick-up.
Yeah, the passengers absolutely loved it.
That is so neat.
I think they had such a good feedback that the passengers loved it that they actually want us to come back and do it again. So that's
pretty
good.
That's great.
We're planning on doing it again this year.
That is so
That's
cool.
That's great.
When you were talking about Monument Valley, and we hadn't been talked about this either, but both of you have appeared in some movies and some TV, haven't you? And I think Steve, you were in the
only in background.
Only in background.
Only in background. Or when I was living in Los Angeles, and once I retired from corporate America, a friend of mine called me because he knew I was in love with old West history and Western movies. He said, "I just saw something in the paper, and I thought of you." I go, "What is it?" He goes, "It's an open casting call for the HBO series Deadwood."
Right.
So this is, I think, about 2004. And so I went down, and I had an audition for being a background actor, and I actually spent the second season on Deadwood as background. And as luck would have it, I ran into a gentleman who I had met through our wrangling activities with actors, Peter Sciarrico, who is also in the movie Tombstone, which obviously I'd want to gravitate to someone like that.
Right.
He was hiring people for the History Channel Wild West Tech.
Right.
And I mentioned to him that, "Hey, I'm doing some background work on Deadwood, and I know you hire for this. Would you be interested in hiring me?" And he goes, "Of course I would." And so I ended up doing a lot of, probably at least a dozen, featured Wild West Tech episodes. Marcy was definitely featured in one of them towards the end of that series. Then we moved to New Mexico, and it was interesting because I was getting emails and phone calls from friends saying, "But Steve, what about your movie career?" And it's like, "I don't have a movie career."
But we have fun.
But we have fun.
But we have fun.
But we didn't realize that New Mexico.
Oh my goodness! They film tons of movies, TV shows here. So we came here and start doing it again.
And within the first 6 months of us moving to New Mexico, we were on a Western set with Val Kilmer. Making a movie. And I spent about 5 weeks on The Lone Ranger with Johnny Depp. Last year I was on probably another 5 weeks with the Seth MacFarlane, A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Mm-hmm.
We've also done other things other than Westerns, especially out here.
TV shows, Breaking Bad, In Plain Sight, all kinds of TV shows.
It's kind of like another hobby.
It's a hobby.
Wow.
Right.
Oh,
well. Gives us
something
else to do.
That's kind of neat. That is kind of neat. Well, I know Tina May wanted to ask about some of the upcoming rides in addition to the Comanche Moon Ride.
Well,
yes.
I always try
yes.
to work a year in advance because of advertising. Right now, I'm working on a ride that I think is kind of unique. And on some of my other rides, let's take the White Earp ride. We've been to O Tucson Studios because they film so many movies. I like Old West history, and I like Western movie history. And I try to combine the two. And we've been to Mescal Studios where they filmed the movie Tombstone. We've ridden through that quite a few times, and people love seeing these sets. And I thought, if they like these sets, they should see the sets that I've been on doing some of my background work in and around the Santa Fe, New Mexico area. So with that concept, I started approaching some of these studios that own these sets about how about a 4 or 5 day ride where we actually can go through the movie set. And my favorite set, it's called Bonanza Creek Ranch, and people can Google that and see what it's all about and see all the wonderful movies that's filmed there. That is probably the epitome of a Western movie set. And I talked to the owner. Marcy and I had a meeting with her, and I actually have rented it out for 2 days for April of 2016. I'm very excited about this. Only 2 days for a five-day event, but as I told my wrangler, I said, "I think we're only going to be on horses for 3 days. He goes, "Well, that's a different concept. Why?" I said, "Well, we're going to film up at the Chama Train Depot. I don't need horses there. I need to film interior scenes because when I rent out the studio, we get to use the entire set. So we get to go inside the saloons and inside the post office and the bank. So we're going to shoot interior scenes as well because what I decided would be more fun to do rather than just ride through Bonanza Creek Ranch is I'd like to go to the canyons where they film movies like Cowboys and Aliens and Silverado and all these various Westerns that have been filmed in the canyons, and then end up at the studio for 2 days. But I have a friend of mine that lives in Santa Fe who's also a screenwriter and a director, and he also offers acting workshops. And I approached him, and I said, well, what if we made like a 45-minute or hour movie that wouldn't be, you know, screened anywhere except in people's homes, but the people who come on the ride within 30 or 60 days after the ride give him time to edit it and add, add music to it. Everyone on the ride could
becomes
be,
a star.
They could be they'll have lines. We'll have a script. No big lines that they have to learn and get nervous about.
Like a home movie.
But like a home movie. But they have
right.
something
fun
to take back with them as their remembrance of this horseback ride.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
So,
what a fun thing to do.
And I haven't got that set up on my website yet because I'm still
working on that one.
I'm still working on that one, but it's, once Bonanza Creek Ranch said yes, they were open to it. We've been moving forward in the last couple of months working on that.
Awesome.
And of course, I'm working on Robber's Roost ride, and I'm working on. I you could probably tell I have such a passion for what Marcy and I do. I think she does too.
Oh yeah, no, of course. I'm behind the scenes. He's the one that I coordinate other things.
Well, I know that it's a team effort to create these events for Great American Adventures, and I'm sure that by now people are wanting to know how they can get in touch with you.
I guess the best way is through my website.
Yes.
All right, and give that to us.
And what is it?
I will. Well, since the name of the company is Great American Adventures, the website is great-american-adventures.com. So you need to put those two dashes between Great American Adventures.
Okay. All right. So visit that, and then you've got a Facebook page too as well, don't you?
I do.
Okay. All right.
Is it under Great American Adventures on your Facebook page, or is it The Great American Adventures?
Probably the best way to do it is find me, Steve Shaw, and then you can find Great American Adventures, because I have Great American Adventures underneath me.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds great.
And the website,
my bucket list keeps growing.
Yeah. The website, I'm so excited about it. We just launched our brand new website just a few months ago. I'm told by my webmaster that we have over 2,000 photos. We've got over 60 pages. So people can take hours to go through all these photos, all these testimonials, read about the history of the ride. So I talk about Whiter's Vendetta Ride, or I talk about John Wayne movies. But kind of give them what to expect on the ride itself.
Well, I've
been
to the website. It's a great one. Yeah, it's a great website
that
you have. Go ahead, Tina.
Well, thank you.
Well, I would just wanted to kind of clue in on some of these comments from the riders that have gone on the rides. And here's one. It says, I started on this adventure green. We'll finish with grit.
The goal in the 4 or 5 days we do these rides is I want people to leave thinking, my God, I'm a cowboy.
Oh, yeah, because we have riders from all ages, all backgrounds, everything. You can't believe it. And the repeat riders, we've had people come back on the Tombstone ride 4 and 5 times. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, the life experiences. You're making life experiences for these people, and I think that's just fantastic. I think it sounds like a wonderful adventure.
And these people come back year after year because not only do they love the ride and the history, but they've made such great friends that it's a reunion. They can't wait to come back the next year just to see everybody. So that
like
makes
that.
It really important. Really great.
And they usually have new clothes to show off, too.
sometimes we have costume contests, and they can't wait to come and show off all the new clothes.
I bet you they work hard just to get the outfits for the next ride. Now, I'm sure you have to have limits on these, so you can get full.
Well, and we do, and the limit usually is the number of horses we can provide. For the last couple years, I've cut off the Whiter Vendetta ride at 30, and that was a very comfortable number. I'm happy if I get 10 or 12 or 15 people, but the Whiter ride became so popular that we cut it off at 30, and it goes so smoothly. And from year to year, I don't know how many people we're going to have. All I do is advertise and see what people are interested in. In 2013, I had 14 people on the Monument Valley Ride.
Wow.
This past year, this past November, we host this one in the first week of November. The weather is fantastic, and there's no tourists to be waving at us. We had 40 people.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Remember, I'm trucking horses in. So we had to cut it off at 40. I easily could have had 60 people this past November.
If our listeners are wanting to come, they need to make the reservations because you will fill. So that's good.
Right.
That's a good point. That we do fill up in some of these rides, and I usually say somewhere between January and April, if you're interested in one of these rides, it's best to get at least your initial deposit in to hold a slot. Yes.
Awesome.
And your first ride for 2015 will be is that the Comanche Moon Ride?
That's the Comanche Moon Ride in the first week of May. When we started putting this ride together, I told the folks in Amarillo, I'd like to come out when it's not hot or humid. And they said, well, try the first week in May. And I said, okay.
That's great. Well, that should be a great ride. And then, again, people can visit the website, visit Steve's Facebook page, and we want to thank you guys for being a Legacy Club Select sponsor because you can find their website or you can connect to their website from our website at equestrianlegacy.net. So be sure and check them out there as well. And Tina May, which of the rides have you decided on?
I think I'm going to do one each year or something like that. How can you choose? They're all very unique in their own way, and they all sound like lots of fun. So I think you just never know. My bucket list just keeps growing. I've got to live for a long time.
And I keep adding new rides every year, so you better hurry up.
That's cool. Well, Steve and Marcy, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, I guess the only thing I would say is that if they have a love of Old West history, or they like to ride, or they like to do both, I think that we can almost guarantee them a fantastic adventure and a fantastic group of like-minded individuals, and the camaraderie on our rides are it's just fantastic.
Well, check out Great American Adventures at their website, on our website, and on Facebook, and get connected and plan your next Great American Adventure and do it soon because they'll be filling up for this year. So, Steve and Marcy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting us.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, you've been a lot of fun, and I know now that Steve doesn't let grass grow under his feet.
No, he does not.
I'm having too much fun.
All right. Well, listen, thanks again. And thinking about that Custer ride that you did, and we're going to take a quick break and come back and with some final thoughts from Tina May. And this is a song called Comanche. And I think he's been recognized as one of the last survivors of...
He was.
Yeah. So we'll listen to this. It's by R.W. Hampton. And again, thanks, Steve and Marcy, for being with us today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we'll be right back.
The battle was over at Custer's last stand, and taps were sounding for all the brave men, while one lone survivor, wounded and weak, Comanche, the brave horse, lay at the General's feet. Comanche, you fought hard. Comanche, you tried. You were a good soldier, so hold your head. high. Even the bravest sometimes must fall. Comanche, the brave horse, you gave your all. Though you are silent, your deeds did speak loud. If your buddies could see you, you know they'd be proud. The symbol of bravery at the little big horn. Poor old Comanche, battle-scarred and worn. Comanche, you fought. Comanche, you tried. You were a good soldier, so hold your head up high. Even the bravest sometimes must fall. Comanche, the brave horse, you gave your all. Comanche, you fought hard. Comanche, you tried. You were a good soldier, so hold your head up high. Even the bravest sometimes must fall. Comanche, the brave horse, you gave your all.
R.W. Hampton, and that is Comanche. And Tina May, I think Monument Valley ride would be the one I'd pick.
Oh, I can't pick one. I've got so many that I want to go to. I was kind of going through the pictures while this song was playing, and they just look so, so neat. So they're very interesting. They're very interesting ride. Monument Valley would be a good one. That would be a hard one, you know, not to go to.
Yeah, well, the scenery there, and, you know, we've all seen so many images from the movies that we've watched over the years. I think that would be cool. But, you know, whether it's the Wyatt Earp ride or the Comanche Moon or any of the new rides that they have scheduled for this year, I think that all would be a lot of fun. And my biggest challenge would be deciding what to wear, I guess, you know, trying to dig out some period costumes.
I wear caps, and I wear my slicker, and I got my hat on all the time. I don't know what else put on. I think I might fit in. I'll have to unload my gun, you know.
Goodness. Well, it was
fit right in.
You would. It was a fun show. It's always great to have Jim McGarvey join us, and great information. Look forward to visiting with the Shawnee Music Park Horse Camp. Hopefully in a few weeks, because that sounds like a really cool place. I just didn't even know it existed. So
I didn't either. So yeah. Jim needs to keep us posted on some of these places we haven't heard of. He's come up with a couple of good ones.
Yeah, Jim's doing a good job of letting us know about some of these campgrounds that are out there. And then, of course, Steve and Marcy were just a ton of fun. And during the break, we were talking about the fact I don't know whether I enjoyed more listening to how he got Marcy or how Wyatt got Curly. So, anyway, it was.
Either one was cute.
It was a lot of fun. So tell us who we're going to be visiting with next week.
Well, next week we've got our regular Robert Eversoll, the Trailmeister. Then we travel to the Shawnee National Forest in Eddyville, Illinois, and talk with Dick Manders, owner of Bear Branch Resort.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that. I've never ridden up in the Shawnee, and a lot of folks that have told me that's a great place to ride, so we look forward to talking with Dick about that. And always fun to have Robert join us on the show, so a lot of great information that we'll be getting from Robert. And then this Thursday, I welcome a new co-host to Campfire Cafe. So Bobby Jean Bell
will
be joining me from Santa Clarita, California. And gosh, such a knowledgeable woman of the history of the West and music. And she spent 4 years in radio, and so we're going to be welcoming her back on the airwaves and joining us for Campfire Cafe. And Tumbleweed Rob will be joining us.
You couldn't have picked a more perfect co-host for that show. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. And then again, on Sunday with Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale. So that's all coming up in the next few days. And we're excited about some things that are coming together for Equestrian Legacy Radio. Our Legacy Club Select Campgrounds and Guest Ranches are where you can find more information about Great American Adventures and some other terrific campgrounds. And all of our Legacy Club sponsors offer discounts to the Legacy Club members. So Legacy Club membership is free, and you can enroll at equestrianlegacy.net for that. And so final thoughts, Tina May.
Well, this is the beginning of a new year, and lots of New Year's resolutions are out there. You know, life is full of choices. It is up to you to make the right one.
Well, it is, and I'm telling you, spend more time in the saddle this year because it's going to be a great year to get out and ride wherever you are across the world and throughout North America. And we remind you, as always, if you climb in the saddle,
get ready for the ride.
Get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net. Thanks for listening.
Come ride with me. It's time to saddle up right away. There's so much to see. Don't worry, I know the trails, I know the way. I called a gentle horse. His eyes are big and brown. He's ready to carry you the whole world around. Come ride with me. Let's ride away. Come take a chance. I'll show you where the mountains touch the sky. It's a horseback dance, and we can ride forever if we try. A dream in the distance, there for you to chase. Out in the sunrise with the wind on your face. Come ride with me. Let's ride away. And the smell of the leather, the sunlight on your skin, they've got us aching to begin. The rumble of hoofbeats much stronger than wine. The dust in your hair, the light in your eyes. Come ride with me. I will run the hills and watch the eagles soar. It's where you want to be. So tell me just what you're waiting for. We'll camp near the meadow and we'll love the night away. And saddle up again when the dawn is turning gray. Come ride with me. Let's ride away. Thank you. leather, the sunlight on your skin. They've got us aching to begin. The rumble of hoofbeats much stronger than wine, the dust in your hair, the light in your eyes. Come ride with me. We'll run the hills and watch the eagles soar. It's where you need to be. So tell me just what you're waiting for. With Cam near the meadow, love the night away, and saddle up again when the dawn is turning gray. Come ride with me. Let's ride away. Come ride with me. Come ride with me today. Come ride with me. Come ride with me. Come ride with me. Oh, come ride.